Hey everybody, and welcome to this episode of Mixed Martial Analysis. And today we're going to be reviewing the fight card that went down last night, which was headlined by Tyron Woodley and Gilbert Burns. Obviously a lot of implications for the welterweight division with Gilbert Burns defeating Woodley last night, and I mean in pretty dominant fashion. A lot of stuff went down last night, a lot of interesting fight results last night, so we're going to get through those. We'll look at the main card in a little more detail, but I want to just quickly read off the winners from the prelims, or the results. So to kick things off, Chris Gutierrez defeats Vince Morales via second round TKO due to leg kicks. Casey Kenney submitted Smolka after that. Brandon Royval submitted Tim Elliott via arm triangle, which was kind of surprising because Tim Elliott's got a pretty nasty ground game, so that gives you some insight into how impressive that is, right? Jamal Hill defeats Clidson Abreu via KO in round one. Daniel Rodriguez beat Gabe Green via unanimous decision, and that's one where Gabe Green came in on short notice. Daniel Rodriguez was, I think, might have got two short notice opponents because he was supposed to fight Kevin Holland. Holland dropped out, Gabe Green steps in, and Daniel Rodriguez picks up a win. He was originally supposed to be fighting Holland on the main card too, so he got bumped down to the prelims. But good win for him. Caitlin Chookagian defeats Antonina Shevchenko. And then we move on to the main card, right? And these are the ones that I gave predictions for, so these are the ones we'll focus on a little bit more, right? But Mackenzie Dern versus Hannah Cyphers. When this fight first kicked off, I was like, holy fuck, man. Hannah Cyphers is looking good. Her boxing was looking good. She had a lot of good footwork going. And then when they would engage in the clinch, she seemed to be the stronger fighter. She seemed to have more of an advantage in the strength department there. And she was just able to she kept framing off of Mackenzie's face and just kept throwing shots at her. And, you know, eventually she defends some takedowns well, and eventually Mackenzie goes for a hip toss, which she hits, but then Hannah Cyphers is able to roll back over on top and ends up in a position where, I mean, anytime you go to the ground with a jiu-jitsu person, especially someone who is like very well versed in it like Mackenzie Dern, it's not safe anywhere, even if you're on top. Like, open guard's not safe, closed guard's not safe. Anywhere that you're going to go with Mackenzie Dern isn't really safe. And I think that Hannah kind of failed to realize the danger until a little bit too late. And once Mackenzie was able to get a hold of her, and I mean, once she went under the leg, it was over from there. I mean, she had everything secured and was able to secure a knee bar in the first leg submission in women's UFC history. I don't think MMA, but I think women's UFC history. So, I mean, a big win for Mackenzie Dern. She got to, you know, she had to overcome some adversity early on in the round in order to pull it off. But again, Hannah just not, I don't think it was that she was disrespecting the ground game of Mackenzie. I just think she got caught in a bad situation and didn't realize the significance of, like, she didn't realize how bad of a situation she was in until she was too late, you know, so until it was too late. So tough loss for her, but Hannah Cyphers is tough as fuck, and Mackenzie Dern's not an easy matchup for anyone because, again, she always has the jiu-jitsu in her back pocket. And I think there were things that Hannah can look at this fight and take away and, like, realize that it came down to kind of one mistake and not detaching yourself from that situation on the ground. You know, you think because you got on top and wound up on top that it's maybe a good idea to hang out there, but you got to get out quickly and just keep the fight where you're finding success on the feet. Because if you can do that and you're not engaging on the ground at all, it's going to be harder and harder as the rounds wear on for Mackenzie to get you to the ground, especially if you can start dotting her up. So tough loss from Hannah Cyphers, but I think there's a lot to learn in this one from her. And like I said, she looked very impressive early on in the fight. So also, just of note, I think this is the best Mackenzie Dern has looked physically throughout her fight career so far. I mean, there are some times where she's come in really heavy, and she looked like she was in good shape and ready for this fight, so that was good to see. And obviously picking up, like I said, the first leg submission win in women's UFC history is a huge deal. So big night for Mackenzie Dern, and Hannah Cyphers is going to have to look to rebound and kind of, you know, not go back to the drawing board, but just realize what are the mistakes were in that fight and, like, what led to the loss. Because I think that she could have, if that fight goes on, man, it's interesting to see what happens, because, like I said, Hannah Cyphers, her boxing is pretty good, and she was circling well, and she was doing a lot of things well, and seemed very powerful when her and Mackenzie clinched up. So tough to tell, but regardless, outcome, can't change it. Mackenzie Dern submission knee bar, great win. Next is Roosevelt Roberts defeats Brock Weaver. And this fight kind of went the way I expected it to. Brock Weaver tried to push things up against the cage, but in open space. And like, in, that was really the only part of the fight where Roosevelt Roberts struggled. His boxing looked good. His hands looked good. He was when he was applying pressure, he was able to like back Weaver up. And eventually, you know, when the second, it was clear that Roosevelt Roberts had a huge advantage when they were out in space because his hands were just so much more smooth and his technique was way more clean. And he was mixing it up so much better. And Weaver, it seemed like his only option for the fight was maybe to get it to the ground, be on top and be the aggressor, turn it into a kind of dogfight. Nope. No pun intended there, right? Because I mean, I've read some articles about Brock Weaver being accused of dogfighting. So that was actually, me saying that was totally just by accident, but that's a real fucking thing that I've seen on like Reddit pages and stuff. So I don't know what to think about all that. But anyway, Brock Weaver did fight a tough fight. He tried to go in and he tried to implement his game plan, but it just wasn't enough to overcome Roberts. And when Roberts really got the hands going and he was able to kind of implement his game plan as the second round wore on, you saw that it really, it took a toll on Brock Weaver and he wasn't able to keep up. Roosevelt gets on top and starts dominating him and secures a rear naked choke. So, I mean, it was a great win for Roosevelt Roberts. And again, just, I would like to see Roosevelt Roberts focus a little bit more on not getting backed up, right? We talked a little bit when I did the breakdown about, like, it's almost just like a little bit of a hesitancy. And I think that, like I said, he's a very gifted striker. And when you start to see him controlling the center of the octagon a little bit better, and if he gets a little bit more aggressive with his striking, it'll draw things out of guys and he'll be able to really open up on them. And I thought he looked good in this fight. It was definitely improved. He would get himself out of those situations. But when he learns that space is his friend and he controls the center of the octagon and is using his footwork to really keep his back off the cage and keep the fight where he has an advantage, Roosevelt Roberts has a ton of fucking potential. And he looked really good last night. Still some little things to shore up and work on, but I thought he looked, I mean, you know, like one of the more promising contenders in the weight class. So it's good to see him go out, pick up the win. Like I said, he looked very technically sound. And he was a little bit better than Weaver everywhere. Like Weaver was really only able to find success pushing things up against the cage, whereas Roberts was a little bit more successful in every department. Next, we had a crazy fight. And these guys got bumped up to the main card after Holland and Daniel Rodriguez got yanked off it. And it was a fight between Billy Quarantillo and Spike Carlisle. And, you know, Alpha Ginger, one of the more recognizable, I guess, prospects, you could say. And he's a very unique character and very, I mean, he's fucking jacked too. And he comes out and opens the fight up with a flying front kick to the face. They end up going to the ground and he's on fire early. I mean, he's coming out of the gate swinging. Definitely wins the first round, looking good on the ground, landing strikes, keeping things aggressive. But you could see that pace, man, you can only keep it up for so long, and if you don't get the guy out of there, you're going to have to suffer the consequences of that later on in the fight. And as things started to wear into the second round, you saw that some of the energy started sapping out of Spike Carlisle, and Billy Quarantillo was really able to get in there and start implementing his game plan and picked up a win. First round belonged to Carlisle. Second round, I think part of he did well. It was more competitive, but Quarantillo was able to just go in there and turn the tide of the fight. And then the third round he was able to really take over. And so it was a good win for Billy Quarantillo. And Spike Carlisle, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's never good to lose, but I don't think this is going to be the most like damaging loss of his career. I think he just has to realize that, you know, when that blitz doesn't work early on, I've got to have more in the tank. I've got to be a little bit more prepared. And when I can't get guys out of there, am I going to be able to go a whole 15-minute fight and remain technical and remain and keep my gas tank, keep it full? You know what I mean? You want to drain it at the end of the fight, not within the first 5 minutes. You know, you don't want to be running on empty and when you still got 10 minutes left to fight. So he's got to learn to manage that a little bit better. But whenever you talk about guys like Spike Carlisle, I feel like the most difficult part about them for fighters like that is always going to be finding the balance. Like, how do you strike the balance between applying calculated pressure and being aggressive and, you know, taking advantage of those openings when they're there and you see him? Because that's who he is as a fighter. He's exciting. He's aggressive. He likes to go out and get shit done, right? But you have to find a way as a coach or his training partners or whatever, the gym that he's at has to find a way to kind of tone that down just a little bit. You want to keep the good pieces intact, but you don't want him getting into trouble and draining himself to the point where, like I said, he's not able to fight a full 15 minutes. So I don't think that's the last we're going to see of Spike Carlisle. I think he's got a good personality. I think he's got a good attitude, and I think he's a well-rounded martial artist. And again, I would like to see what that fight looks like over three rounds if he doesn't completely burn himself out after the first round and expend all that energy. I think it's a more competitive fight. So I still think Spike Carlisle has a lot of room to improve. And for Billy Quarantillo, this was an excellent win, and he got to put on display that, you know, he's not a guy to be trifled with, man. Got to take him fucking seriously. All right, next was probably the most questionable fight of the night between Augusto Sakai and Blagoy Ivanov. Augusto picks up a split decision win, and I thought that Ivanov won the first round. I thought every round was close and pretty competitive, but I felt that Ivanov was closing the distance more, asserting himself, pushing forward, landing the better strikes, and Augusto was finding mild success here and there, right? Not that he wasn't, like, hurting Ivanov when he was landing or anything. Like, he was doing good work, but I just thought that Ivanov outworked him a little bit. Second round, I thought it belonged to Augusto Sakai. I thought that his strikes were a little bit more cleaner in that round. He started really working the leg kick, and it started wearing on Ivanov a little bit. Ivanov's pressure backed off, and it seemed like the tides turned a little bit in that round. Now, you get into the third round, and it's a super close – you're talking about a close fight now. Most likely 1-1, probably 2-10-9 rounds apiece, right? One for each guy. And you've got a really close third round in which I think that Augusto Sakai barely won the third round. But when you consider that fence grab, that was pretty atrocious, man. And Ivanov is, a pretty talented grappler. So when he gets that fight to the ground, and a point should have been taken away for that. I mean, it was blatant, and it definitely impacted the outcome of the fight. Because it looked like Ivanov was going to complete the takedown. And if you can sit on top of a guy for an entire round, especially I think there were like 2 or 3 minutes left, you're most likely going to secure the round. So Augusto Sakai got away with one for sure, but what I was most – I want to focus on some of the positives from his game. His boxing looked really good. He looked really patient. He was working leg kicks in well. He was working in kicks to the body. He looked very well-rounded, and he looked like a very composed fighter in there. It's not easy to go in and fight a guy like Ivanov, who has a lot of experience and who has fought some of the top-level guys in the UFC already. It's not easy to go in there and fight a guy like that and fight patiently. Like, a lot of guys want to get him out. And when you see a lot of young guys fighting a lot of veterans, the veterans know that. They know that the young guys are a little bit excitable, and that if they can just kind of weather the storm and slow the fight down to their pace, they're able to control it and implement their game plan a little bit more. You see a lot of old savvy, especially in the heavyweight division. It happens all the time. They slow the fight down and try to bring it down to their speed. But Augusto Sakai just fought a calm, patient fight and was able to maintain a pretty consistent pace throughout the three rounds. So there was that to focus on from him that was good. Like I said, his boxing looked crisp. He has a really nice left hook, digging the leg kicks in well, mixing kicks into the body. He fought a very well-rounded fight. The fence grab was atrocious, though, and I think a point should have been taken away. And at the very least, this fight ends in a draw. 10-9 for Ivanov in the first, I think. 10-9 for Sakai in the second, and then if you give Sakai the second even, it's a 9-9 draw, right? Because he gets the point taken away. But I thought the third round was closed, and like I said, I thought Augusto Sakai won it, but had he not grabbed the fence, he might have been looking at a completely different third round. So I understand Ivanov's frustration in that, and that he probably does feel a little bit cheated out of it, because you gotta remember too, man, Blagoy Ivanov is he's fought some good guys in the UFC, and he has some good wins, but he's still really trying to find his footing here. And he's still trying to, like, make a name for himself in the division. And on top of all that, the guy's lost 2 in a row now, right? So he's definitely in a little bit more dangerous territory. It's not like he's a huge name, right, either at heavyweight. Like, he's fought some big guys, but again, he's not like a Junior Dos Santos or a Cain Velasquez. He's not that, like, I know Cain's a little bit more relevant now, right, but you know what I mean. He doesn't have that, like, star power, so he's in a little bit more jeopardy than a guy like Arlovsky, who has a lot of losses on his record, and Overeem. Overeem's look great, too, by the way, of late, but you know what I mean. It's a little bit more threatening when he suffers multiple losses in a row, so he's going to be understandably upset at that decision. And I thought that it was – the ref should have caught it, but shit happens, man. I mean, fuck. What can you do, you know? I don't want to just say shit happens. I shouldn't say that because, like, in that situation, that's something that should be caught almost every single time. The ref does need to catch that one, so that's kind of on him. But it's hard to be in there and do that, so I don't want to dig into, you know, beating refs up too bad. But at the very least, fight should have been a draw. Okay, so let's move on to the main event between Tyron Woodley and Gilbert Burns. And Tyron Woodley has a lot to prove in this fight because he's coming off of a loss to Kamaru Usman, right? And it wasn't just a loss. It was lopsided, man. And in a fight where a lot of people accused Woodley of looking like he didn't really want to be there, and I mean he didn't really have a lot to offer Kamaru Usman, like he didn't really do anything to change the narrative of the fight, and he just you can't say he was accepting it because that's not fair, right? But it just like didn't seem like all the energy was there to really fight back, and everybody said he looked flat. So this was a big fight for him, and he's coming in against at the time the number 6 ranked guy in the world who's streaking through the welterweight division right now. I think after the win last night, Gilbert Burns just increased his win streak to 6. Might be 5, but I think it's 6 now. And, I mean, when you beat the number 1 ranked guy in the world and the former welterweight champion, and you do it in the fashion that Gilbert Burns did it, I mean, hurt Woodley in the first round, and then dominated every round thereafter. I think the first round was probably a 10-8. For Burns, and then you dominate every round thereafter. I mean, you're doing a lot for your case at the welterweight championship. Like, you're doing a lot for your... It's hard to deny that Gilbert Burns is ready for a title shot. Like, I think he is. I think that what you saw from him last night was a world championship caliber performance, and his jiu-jitsu was just scary because he's got that, and he's a world champion jiu-jitsu player, man, and his striking has been looking phenomenal, and every time he steps into the octagon, it just gets better and better and better. So, and this is, again, though, looking at this fight and you think about the Usman fight, it doesn't seem like Woodley's head is all there. I think he goes into the fight well-prepared, I think he's feeling good, and then he faces adversity in the first round, right? I think he goes out in the second, and it seems like he kind of recenters himself. He's firing off the right hand. He connects with it a couple times, and you go, oh, yeah, you got to remember that Woodley still has that, right? He has that fucking right hand that can end the fight at any moment. But second round wears on. Gilbert Burns gets a takedown, just starts beating on him and wearing on him. And at that point, you've got to be thinking, okay, we've got to win the next 3 rounds because we definitely lost the first 2, and the first round might have been a 10-8. You've got to be thinking that Woodley for sure has to win the next 3, and a finish would even be preferable. But as the third round wears on, again, Gilbert's able to push Woodley back against the fence and just implement his game plan, keeping volume in his face, mixing in leg kicks, had a more versatile striking attack than Woodley, and he was able to keep him backing up. And then when the fourth and fifth round came around, it really felt like Woodley just wasn't there. It felt like he lacked a sense of urgency to go out and win the fight. And I mean, don't get me wrong. When you're getting backed up and you're getting beaten up by a guy like Gilbert Burns, who is, like I said, a world jiu-jitsu champion, has great striking. It's much improved. He's applying pressure. There's not a lot of openings for you. You've landed the right hand and hasn't, you know, the openings for the right hand haven't been there all fight. It's like, Woodley, in that situation, though, when you're down 3 rounds and you're a professional fighter, and I mean, it's easy to sit here from my perspective and say this, right? And you have to go out and do more. If you want to win that fight and you're Tyron Woodley, you have to go out and do more. And to me, what it looked like is that Woodley was waiting, from my perspective, watching through a fucking TV screen. I'm not Tyron Woodley. I'm not his coaches. Only they really know what's going on. And, like, really only Woodley knows what's going on in his head. But they have a better feel for everything than I do, right? But from my perspective, it looked like Woodley just wanted the fight to be over. Like, he just kind of wanted it to end and, like, almost, like, I don't want to say accept the defeat, but it didn't seem like he was overly excited about taking big risks and engaging and picking up a win, or he would have done it, right? There was like hesitancy there, and you got to keep in mind with Tyron Woodley that he's nearly 40 years old. I mean, he's been in the UFC for a while, and I think the main difference maker in this fight, and I think that Woodley, like I said, early on he looked better, and I think that he felt like he had a chance, and as it wore on, I think he just kind of felt like he wasn't able to find any success, and he seemed confused. He seemed hesitant. And I mean, granted, that could all be due to Gilbert Burns just coming in and having an excellent game plan and not stopping the pressure. Right. But I really think that what you saw was a guy in Gilbert Burns who was hungry, who wanted it really fucking bad, who went in, who kept the pressure on, who had that mentality just like Usman did when he challenged Woodley for the title. Woodley's fighting these guys who are hungry and who the only thing they care about is winning a world title. They care about being the best in the world. And you were just, yes, you're Tyron Woodley, and yes, you have knockout power, and yes, you're a legend in the division and in the UFC and in the sport of MMA, but you're also a roadblock, and they're looking at you that way, and they're thinking about running through you, and their only thoughts right now are on winning a world championship. It's evident when guys are doing that too, because their performances just speak volumes about how much effort they're putting into their camp and their training. Woodley is a guy who I think he's got this rap stuff going on, and he's very into like that whole culture and stuff. And I think his headspace is just elsewhere. I think he thinks about different things. I think he knows retirement is coming relatively soon at some point. It's coming down the road, man. And he's probably thinking to himself, man, I might have other avenues after this, things that I want to go do and that I want to go pursue. And I'm in here fighting against guys who the only fucking thing they're thinking about is winning a world title. It's hard to stay competitive against those guys because, like I said, this is all that they want. And I think that's kind of what you saw more than anything last night, is that it was a young, hungry, violent Gilbert Burns coming through and trying to make a statement. And Woodley, you know, when he wasn't able to implement his game plan, it wasn't going his way. I think, I don't know, like I said, I don't know what's going on in his head, but it didn't seem like a guy who was desperate to win a fight in rounds 4 and 5. It didn't seem like he was desperate and willing to take chances to win that fight. So I don't know. And you got to wonder what they're going to do with Woodley next, just because I think a matchup against a guy like Colby Covington is a terrible idea, because you've just, and I mean, Woodley has a lot to think about. He's just coming off. There's going to be a lot of things that he's going to have to consider. But if you want to match him up against one of the top contenders, man, I'm not sure Colby Covington or like Leon Edwards is the answer. Guys who do, and especially Colby Covington with his volume, I wouldn't do that for Woodley right now. He's got to fight somebody like maybe ranked within the top five, but fight against one of those guys up top right now, man, I wouldn't do that. I don't think it would be a smart move for the UFC or, I mean, the career of Woodley. Not that he could, I mean, Woodley has that right hand and the power, and he's a world-class champ. It's not that he can't beat any of those guys on any given night. I'm just saying, coming off 2 losses in a row, do you really want to fight a guy like Colby Covington, who has immense wrestling pressure, and like, it seems like a bad stylistic matchup, at least at this point in Woodley's career, you know, and it's late in his career? I don't think so, man. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Tyron Woodley now. And again, Gilbert Burns just kind of shook up the 170-pound division and called out. He said he wants to fight for the title against his teammate Kamaru Usman. So, man, it's going to be interesting there, because you got Jorge Masvidal up top, and then you got guys that people forget about like Santiago Ponzinibbio, who've been hurt for the past 2 years, but he's riding like a 7-fight win streak right now. 170 is interesting, man. Really interesting. And Leon Edwards, there's a lot of guys in there that are ready to challenge for the title. And it's like, I think that the top five on any given night, any one of them might be able to beat each other. So it makes welterweight really interesting right now. So we'll see, man. We'll see what they do with Burns. He's going to end up fighting one of the top guys. I don't know if he'll end up fighting Usman, but he's going to get a shot at somebody like a Colby or a Leon Edwards at the very least. And it'll be a title contender bout, I'd imagine. Because like I said, Woodley ranked number one in the world at the time, and he beat him pretty handily. So impressive victory for Burns. Again, don't want to take away from how impressive Burns' victory was, but when rounds 4 and 5 roll around and you can just kind of see the look in Woodley's eyes that he's not there, you got to question about like, what's his motivation to go in there and put it on the line in order to win. But great. I mean, obviously he stepped in there, so he's willing to put it on the line in that sense. But when you're down in a fight, you got to be able to take chances, man, or you can't just accept it, you know, especially at this level when you got guys, like I said, like Burns, who aren't accept, like their only goal is to blitz through you. Anyway, I think that covers everything that I wanted to talk about from this card. Like I said, really interesting night of fights, good night of fights. And we got another card coming up this weekend, Saturday, June 6th. And it's going to be held at the same arena, the UFC Apex Arena in Vegas, where they do like Dana White Contender Series and shit. No fans, same deal, right? But it's going to be headlined by Amanda Nunes and Felicia Spencer for the women's featherweight title. That's a great fight. I mean, it's always great when you get to see Amanda Nunes, because she is the greatest female fighter of all time and among the talks with one of the greatest fighters ever. male or female. Rafael Sun Sal fights Cody Garbrandt in the co-main event. Corey Sandhagen and Aljamain Sterling is right below them. Those guys should be the co-main event. In my opinion, that fight is fucking huge for 135 pounds. It's the biggest fight in the division you can make, aside from the title fight, which looks like it's going to be Jose Aldo and Piotr Jan. So this is, I mean, whoever wins this fight, in my opinion, is worthy of challenging for the title. So this has, like, the title implications on the line, whereas Corey Sandhagen just beat a Sun Sal. So I don't really under – I mean, I know Cody Garbrandt has a bigger name, so that's probably why they did it, but – the more important fight between the Sun Sal and Garbrandt and Sandhagen and Sterling, the more important fight is Sandhagen and Sterling for that division. Neil Magny fighting Anthony Rocco Martin. And then Sean O'Malley is going to kick the main card off in a fight against Eddie Wineland, a longtime vet. So you're going to get to see this young surging prospect who everybody's excited about fight a guy who has legit experience. And it's going to be a real challenge and the toughest fight of Sean O'Malley's career to date. So lot to look forward to. Let's go through the main card real quick. There's also Caceres versus Chase Hooper, Ian Heinisch versus Gerald Meerschaert, Brian Kelleher versus Cody Stamann, Charles Byrds versus Maki Pitolo. And then you go down to the early prelims, Juicy A. Formiga versus Alex Perez, Devin Clark and Alonzo Menafield, and Herbert Burns versus Evan Dunham. So good night of fights. The main card is like a lot of implications at 135 pounds, and obviously the women's flyweight title being on the line is a big deal. Neil Magny coming back. Yeah, I mean, it's a really good fight card. I'm fucking excited for it, and we'll get a breakdown drop probably on Tuesday or Wednesday for that one, and we'll get that out. So I think that covers it. Thank you, everybody, who tuned into the podcast. Thank you to all the subscribers, people who drop comments, everybody listening. If you are listening on YouTube right now, just know that the audio version is also available on whatever podcast platform you like to use, Spotify, Google Play Store, iTunes, whatever. And obviously, if you're listening to the audio version, you can find us on YouTube as well. So, yeah, again, thank you for tuning in, and have a good day. Bye-bye.